Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have joining us Susan Templeton. Susan is the vice chair of Siebold Capital Management, and she is going to be sharing some of the lessons that she's learned throughout her career and leadership lessons. She serves on a number of boards, and looking forward to today's conversation with Susan. Well, I guess first off, Susan, can you give us just a little bit of your career, a little bit of your story? Take us back to kind of from the time that you got out of college to where you are today.
Sure. I started my career with Dreyfus Mutual Funds, and I was in sales for them. And I called on bank trust departments and brokerage firms in the Midwest and sold their mutual funds as investment vehicles that they would use for their clients. So the term we used at the time was called a wholesaler. And from there, I was hired away, which often happens, by a client, the M&I Bank Holding Company. And they hired me to they recently acquired a mutual fund company and they needed a person to come in and run the organization for them. So they hired me away. Just a little side note, since this discussion is about leadership, it's very typical of financial services firms is to take their top marketer or salesperson and then put them in management, which is, you know, the skills to be a good salesperson and the skills to be a good manager or leadership person are often very different skills. It's
right.
It's like going to your dentist because your knee hurts. They're both doctors, you know, an orthopedic and a dentist are both doctors, but it's very different skills and knowledge. So I was thrown into this position of running an organization with an established team with zero leadership skills. And they taught me the hard way. They worked me over and I learned to be a much better leader as a result of them. And they certainly humbled me. But shortly thereafter, or not shortly, about 5 years later, I was hired away by William Blair and Company to run their mutual fund group for them. But frankly, a large organization, you also deal with politics. Things don't get done as quickly as perhaps you'd like. And all of your ideas don't always get implemented. And I decided that I wanted to go off on my own and that my skill set was strong enough that I could be more successful in the long term and happier. So I left and started my own firm, which was, we call in the industry, a third-party marketing firm. And what this business does is represent money managers that want to get in the institutional side of the business and access corporate pension plan money, foundation, and endowments. So my firm was strategy, consulting, and sales for these firms. I was early on. I was one of the first entrants into this area. Very successful. Problem was, more successful I got, the more I was on the road all the time. Two children at home. And one day I woke up and I said, there's something more important than making a lot of money. And so I worked my way out of that organization and became a stay-at-home mom for a little while. That lasted about 8 months. I went crazy, although I have great admiration for stay-at-home moms now. Went back, got my MBA, and then at the University of Chicago part-time, and then launched my my most recent business that I have now, which was Stafford Wells Advisors, fee-only wealth management firm serving high net worth families. And I've grown that over the last 16 years. I merged it 3 years ago with a larger firm that really has taken over the management. And I focus pretty much on clients and research. And at this point right now, I'm winding down and should be wrapped up by the end of the year or first quarter next year.
Okay. Well, I ask this question of most every guest. If you were able to go back, knowing what you know now, and talk to a 22-year-old Susan, what advice would you give her?
Advice for 22-year-olds getting into the career business. I have to say, you know, Richard Thaler, he's an economist from the University of Chicago, and I don't know if anybody's read the book Nudge, but it's a great book. And he works with students closely all the time. And I remember him about a year ago telling this story. And he said something about something like 60% of all students that leave college and go into a designated career end up changing their career. And he said, the reason is you really don't understand the job that you're putting all this work in to get into. And then you get there and you realize it's not the job you wanted. And so what he encourages people to do is learn about the job, do an internship, find some way to really get your arms around what that position entails. A great example of that is, in his position, he's a professor. Well, somebody that wants to go into teaching would say, gee, I want to be a professor in a college. But guess what? You teach maybe 10% of the time. Mm-hmm. The other 90 is doing so many other functions. So it's important to get to know the position before you get into it. I think my greatest regret in my whole career was not getting a mentor early on. When you're young and you're particularly in a larger organization and you're dealing with leadership in a leadership position, but you're also dealing with company politics, certain cultures, dynamics, you're too young. When you're young, you can't, it's hard to synthesize that information and really understand what's happening around you and how to work well within that environment. And someone who's more seasoned, who's a mentor, can really better help you with that. And I think it would make a world of difference.
Is there any advice that you received early on that you wish you would have ignored?
the one advice that I see people, probably not. I didn't get enough advice. I didn't get any advice. And I think that was the hard part. But something I do see people doing, and I think it's more a time of social media and everybody's promoting themselves and being way out there. There's something that's getting lost in all of that. And so there's this big theory out there, fake it until you make it. And I truly believe in the theory. But when you're just getting out of school and you're interviewing for a job, the last thing they want someone is faking it, saying, well, I can do this and I can do that. Your resume is right in front of them. You have a lot to learn. So you're not going to fake it in front of an interviewer. So I would say hold off on the fake it to make it. Nobody wants a know-it-all or someone that's kind of that's arrogant. They want someone that's humble.
So I don't think I've asked this question of anybody that we've had on, but what was your first job ever?
It's funny, when I was at the University of Chicago, they went around and asked people their first job. And then we had to associate who in the room was associated with that first job. And no one got this one. I grew up in a manufacturing town, Manchester, New Hampshire. And we had the mills that manufactured shoes, sweaters, everything. And it was a large immigration population from Canada that came over to do that. And I was determined to go to work at 15 years old. So I walked down to one of the mills and I got a job sewing shoes. My parents were mortified. But it's great because you need to learn from the ground up and you need to understand what other people and what the job is like for everybody. So okay. I sewed shoes.
All right. So I guess that'd be a cobbler, right? Or I'm not sure if that's the official term.
But it's Tom the Can shoes, which is no longer around. But yeah, it was just, you sewed shoe after shoe. You did hundreds of them. Same stitch.
Sure. So we have a lot of new leaders maybe taking on their first leadership role or new CEO. And typically they're inheriting a team or they're maybe building out a team. What advice would you give a new leader? What should they focus on as they come into that new role?
I think, really the culture of the organization is really going to dictate a lot. I think the type of people, especially if you're bringing on people under you that are also in leadership positions, need to think about how everybody interacts and gets along and works closely together. One of the things that was taught to me, not by a book or a course, which I wish I had done, was in a leadership position, you're not really the boss. A leadership position, your job is to pave the way so people can do their job. And that means taking care of helping get them through obstacles and issues that might arise about that. And so you're really devoted to them and to their success, not your success. And I just think the humbleness is really, they sense when you're not there about them. So I think those are, the other thing too, is recognize people often and recognize them visibly to others. That means so much to people.
So you've been a board member, number of boards, you've worked with boards. Talk a little bit about that. That's typically where a lot of people as a new leader, maybe haven't had a lot of experience working with a board. What advice would you give around working with a board effectively?
Be prepared. Yeah. And I think, you know, a board who's doing their job is going to ask a lot of questions. So you need, you know, obviously you need to do your homework and be prepared on that. I think risk management is becoming so critical now for boards and their concern, whether it's from a regulatory standpoint, whether it is from a compliance standpoint, is really important. So make sure you're on the forefront of all of that and you recognize that and you remain educated. I even, as a board member where I am, you know, I'm on the investment committee and the audit committee, but, you know, environmental issues and are becoming important, ESG, whether you believe in it or not, the point is it's there and you have to deal with it and you have to respond to it. And actually as a board member, I went out and got certified in climate leadership. But I think as a member person reporting to a board, make sure that you keep up to date on all of these areas.
Is there anything that you would have, looking back on, groups that you should have gotten more involved with as far as to help in your career, whether networking, you know, some people just go out and they just randomly network with groups. And most of the time I hear that's sometimes a waste of time, but any particular areas that you think would have been helpful earlier on?
I think, you know, I always wanted to get my MBA when I was at William Blair. Everybody, you know, I won't say everybody, but it felt like everybody had their MBA. And I wish I was afraid to get off track and go get it and or cut back on my hours so that I could get that accomplished. And I regret not doing that sooner. It was such a valuable part of my career and life. And you know, taking a step back for a couple of years isn't going to hurt you in your career. So I think that's one thing in hindsight. And again, you know, I came up at a time there weren't mentors. I was in an all-male organization. I was the only female professional. So, you know, if I had had a mentor, I think I could have played that better. I didn't play it terribly, but I just didn't know how to.
Any books that you tend to recommend to other leaders, or anything that you've read in the past or recently that you think would be good to put on your reading list?
Yeah, I do. I don't know if this one will go well with younger people. My kids had to read it in high school and they hated it. So maybe there's a time in life when but to me, it's the most impactful book I've ever read in my life. And it's Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. Just loved it. And maybe that's the timing. There's an age or a maturity level. But a really fun one. And my daughter read it at 24 and just loved it. So it's called Influence, the Psychology of Persuasion by Robert Cialdini. And, you know, it's not only persuading people, you know, it is persuading people, but if you're leading and you want to encourage people and you want to nudge them to do an action, it just gives you so many great insights into working with people. I just love the book. I'm pulling from my younger kids or my kids in their 20s. And what they're reading and what they find really interesting. Another favorite of theirs is Organizational Physics. Now, the label sounds terrible and boring, but apparently it's just so much of it can be applied to your overall life skills as well as management and leadership skills.
That one I haven't had on the list, so definitely check this out. I'm definitely familiar with the other ones. So great, great recommendations. Any quotes that you refer to or?
I think, you know, I think one of my favorites is, and I think I've always lived, but this one, we grew up in a family where failure was an accomplishment. You know, you got patted on the back for trying. It didn't matter whether you failed or achieved. It was just, you know, congratulations, you put yourself out there. So we've always, myself and my siblings are pretty fearless about taking on new challenges. So I think there's Robert Kennedy said at one time, he goes, only those who dare to fail greatly can never achieve greatly. So I think that's, I see so many young people who are so scared of failure. It's a shame.
Yeah, absolutely. So outside of work, what are some of the things that you enjoy doing to recharge?
Well, my daughter and I do triathlons together. This year we're invited to nationals. So so there's a lot of running, biking, swimming that go into that. And then I do love sports. That's how I recharge. So golf, skiing, tennis, you name it, I probably play it. I'm not great at anything, average at all, but, I love sports. I'm not a fan of TV. I figure when I'm old and in a wheelchair, I can watch all the TV I want. So right now it's, I do read, I love historical fiction.
So the triathlon events, which one do you dread? Or is there any that you dread?
Well, I'm cutting back. And now I do what we call an Olympic distance, you know, not the longer distances ones. I dread it just about when I'm getting in the water and somebody's kicking me in the face. Almost every time I say, if I get out of here alive, I will never do this again. And, you know, 2 hours after the event's over, I'm signing up for the next one. So go figure.
Yeah, that's great. So what parting advice would you give our audience as they are newer up and coming leaders?
I would say invest in a mentor early on. Would be, and if you're going to go into a leadership role, at least take a leadership course. That's so critical. I think all these young people hear it enough. I'm just repeating what everybody else says probably, but get in the office, be around people, network with people. You learn so much. They learn more about you. And I think lastly, too, I think this younger generation, I know I'm sounding like an older person, but appearances matter. You know, it may be wrong that somebody judges you by appearance, but the truth is people do. Things are competitive enough. So dress when you walk in the office, be presentable and look professional and look the part.
Well, Susan, this has been a lot of fun talking with you, and definitely I know this is going to be helpful for those that are listening, and wish you continued success in all you're doing and in your next triathlon too. And definitely enjoyed our time together.
I did too. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.